Are you also tired of one-size-fits-all weight loss plans? Meet Noom, the personalized solution that meets you where you are. Noom is able to understand your unique needs, from dietary restrictions to medical concerns. Unlike restrictive programs, Noom embraces your lifestyle and choices. Discover a sustainable approach to weight loss, tailored just for you. Honestly, Noom felt like it was made for me. It's not just about what I eat. It's about understanding why. With Noom, I've learned so much about myself and built healthier habits that stick. It's all about progress, not perfection. Say goodbye to restrictive diets and experience the Noom app for yourself with personalized lessons and expert coaching. Noom's psychology and biology-based approach has helped over 5.2 million people achieve their goals. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, this is Matt Parker, author of A Radical Enterprise, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Hursko. Once again, we're back for another episode. So this week, we have two special guests, actually, the hosts of the Transformation Simulation Podcast. We have Miss Alicia Yannick.
We do.
And her partner, who I'm really hoping I don't butcher his last name, Nathan Chawilau Ashe.
Oh, that was great, Jay.
Holy shit, I got that
you got
right.
It.
Public apologies to Joshua Karievsky, whose name I butcher every chance I get. So first of all, I want to thank you both for joining us. So before we go into the show, I want to give you a chance to actually introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you, a little bit of the bio, you know, ego flaunting stuff. And I'm going to start with you, Alicia, which I know makes you very uncomfortable. But here
it does.
We are.
I was going to say, you're going to start with Nathan, right? I don't want to go first. I hate this part. I should have just given you talking points so I didn't have to do this. I don't even know how to describe what I've been doing. So in 2004, I went to a little training by Ken Schwaber on something called Scrum, and I didn't want to go, and I rolled my eyes into the back of my head, and I was probably a fussy pants for the first day or so, and I walked out and thought, this could work, and that was that. And it was, I mean, it sounds really simplistic, but it evolved over time. And I've worked for small companies and big companies, and I've had important titles, I suppose, where I led transformations and led teams of teams. And through it all, what's been most important to me is the values and principles that I think fall under the Agile umbrella and the things I've learned and the stories I get to share.
Awesome. Awesome. Cool. How about you, Nathan?
All right. Like Alicia, I get a little nervous whenever I have to introduce myself. I think my Agile journey started about 10, 12 years ago. I was on a team at a company, and we really needed to find a new way to work. And me and another colleague were tasked with finding that way, and we stumbled into Scrum. And we bootstrapped it. And ended up over a 10-year period, I worked about every role on a Scrum team, did a small, led a small transformation of a department, a marketing department to Agile. And I, unlike Alicia, where she has all that nimble expertise with small companies,
so
I've only worked
shit.
For
so
no,
much
really.
Shit is
I'm
about
serious.
To come out of.
Well, no, from an Agile perspective, I've never worked for a small company. I've only worked for
That's
big
true.
Companies.
We talked about that. Yeah.
I have only worked in these big matrix organizations that are siloed, that don't talk to each other, where all these things go on. So the two of us together bring, I think, an interesting dynamic, because she has both the big company and large company experience. I have the large company experience. And, you know, we have a lot of fun working together. But I will say the one thing that usually when I'm asked to introduce myself, I didn't do it this time, but I usually say, I'm Nathan. You might call me an Agilist. I have a whole bunch of certifications that are supposed to mean that I can help you be agile. The truth is, they don't mean jack shit. I am here to help you be better at whatever your better is. And that's usually how I kind of introduce myself when I go into.
Except you don't say jack shit when you go into companies. Don't be acting like you do.
Well, I usually say, I'm here to fucking help you
you
with
never
your shit.
You're such a liar.
I've always wanted to, my tagline is, I've always wanted to say, hi, my name is Jay. Like Nathan, I have all these certs. What I'm really here to do is help you unfuck yourself. There that's you what I've always wanted to say.
That is great.
I like that.
I love that.
Do you think there's a time and a place that we can actually say that? Because that would be awesome.
Honestly, it would take two written books, a couple of conference keynotes, and enough name cachet that you could walk in and get away with it. Like before we were recording, we were talking about Dave Snowden, who's a known curmudgeon, right? We're all big Dave Snowden fans. He can get away with being that way because he has that reputation. He has that, not even brand, but that is part of his brand. He is a smart guy who can be a little bit confrontational because he's confident and he's established. That I think is what it comes down to. When you have the money that you don't care if they throw you out or not, I think that's when that happens.
Maybe that's when I'll know I'm a grown-up, when I can walk in and say that I have enough gray hair to help you fuck yourself. If you want to listen, awesome. If you don't, I'll move on.
That's a great way to leave a job. Hey, I've been here. I have helped you unfuck yourself. It's been great. Bye.
Shows at 6 and 10. Try the veal. Tip your waitress. So
never try the veal. Never.
Oh yeah, tofu, the tofurkey.
The tofurkey.
So let's talk about your show, because your show is different than ours, right? So you have Transformation Simulations, name of the show. You've done two separate seasons, and it's an interesting mix of scripted and dialogue, where there's a scripted part of it, but there's also the healthy conversation around the script that you just followed. So I'm going to start up with the easy low-hanging fruit question of, well, where did this idea come from?
The younger one.
It's the younger by like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, it's like 2 months. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It came from Nathan. Actually, Nathan, let me tell this story, because I was thinking about this today. And then Nathan, you can correct me when I'm wrong, or you can just find a place when I'm wrong so you feel good about yourself. So what happened was, we were working together at a company with a gaggle of coaches, and Nathan, I have another phrase for what a group of coaches is, but I'm pretty sure that's like,
no, it's an argument.
Yeah,
it's an
No, it's just a bag of dicks is what it is. So Nathan and I are working at a company, and we didn't work on the same initiative, but we worked in the same group. They were like, let's call it 20-something. And Nathan tosses out, I think, to a small group of us, a little email on the side that says, hey, I'm thinking of doing a podcast. I'd like it if you all join me. And Nathan's pretty organized. So he said, who wants to sign up for what episode, blah, blah, blah. And no way on God's green earth would this kid have put her voice across the waves if it weren't for Nathan. So I am imminently thankful for the opportunity he gave me, because I wouldn't have had the courage. I wouldn't have thought I had anything to say, despite never being able to shut my mouth. I wouldn't have taken that risk. It would have been too much for me. And what happened, Jay, was everybody kind of bailed, and I was the one who hung in there. So he got stuck. And then we finished out our first season, and he sent me a gift certificate for shoes. So I signed up for a second season. That's how we ended up with two seasons.
Click a slate, a woman's heart through her feet. Okay.
I didn't know that worked. I'm so glad it did.
You knew it worked. Because he said, no pressure, but hey, want to do season two. So really, I was the last man standing of everybody else he invited. And here we are. And then we dubbed ourselves the Agile Twins because we're so very much alike. So I don't know if you heard our intro where Nathan calls us the Agile Twins. Like, he's a foot taller than I am. I think he weighs
more than she does.
Yeah, 100 more pounds. I happen to not be a male. Our skin color's different. We were born 2 months apart. But I think we found that we're a little bit like puzzle pieces. We're very different. We have our uniqueness about us, but we fit in a way that makes a better picture when we talk about things together.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you two have opposite experiences in this crazy world that we work in, which actually does fit together where Nathan was talking about how, Alicia, you've had a lot of experiences with startups and smaller type companies, and that truly unique, micro footprint, where Nathan has been in some of the same trenches I have, where it's all big enterprises. The left hand doesn't even know that there's a concept of a right hand, let alone that there is one, let alone that there's people over there. So I can see where those two differing perspectives and experience can kind of layer in to make a fully formed cake.
Nathan, yeah. Did I describe it right? Was that revisionist history?
Okay. Well, I think it's revisionist history from your perspective. I'll give you a quick perspective from my take. I wanted to start a podcast. I sent out an invitation, just like Alicia said, to a bunch of coaches. And from my perspective, the truth is, Alicia and I clicked, and I'll be honest, I didn't click as well with the other coaches. The other coaches, no offense to them, they know who they are. They're probably going to listen to this and say, "Oh, Nate, what are you talking about me?" But anyway, they're good. Alicia was comfortable bootstrapping it, just talking and being herself. And I thought that, when you say you're going to do a podcast and release it to the world, there's some people who want it to be completely polished, and I'm totally okay with it. All podcasts are people talking. I mean, we're all sitting at home right now. It looks like Alicia's drinking wine, but she's not. I mean, everybody's comfortable, mm-hmm. and we're doing this talk. We can't be that polished. And so Alicia and I just clicked, and I'm thankful for it. And it ended up weeding down to the two of us, I'll say. And I'm really happy for that. She's been a great partner. She's the brains in this organization, in this partnership. It's true. She's the brains. She gets top billing. If you ever hear us mention, it is always Alicia and Nathan. It is never Nathan and Alicia.
And you know why you do that? Because I'm older. Because then you follow it up with age before beauty. So don't be acting gracious.
Well, you've got the experience. You've got the experience.
Okay, so enough, like, smoke up my skirt. What was really
interesting. You've got the mind, the intellect. You've got it. Come on.
I got it all going on, brother. That's right. I got it all going on. But what's really interesting, Jay, to me was I find it sometimes difficult to collaborate with a group of coaches or with even with another person, because collaboration is really personal. You're letting your guard down. You're just absolutely checking out your ego. We throw around that word vulnerability, but real collaboration mm-hmm. is just a kind of a nakedness, if you will, of your ideas and your thought processes. And I'm pretty sloppy up front because I use sticky notes and Nathan doesn't, and I'm not polished like he is, and it's rough. But what we found was, particularly on season two, so season two, we actually wrote a whole script for the season, and it got to be where we can't necessarily tell now who wrote which script, because we started to blend. And I thought that I use that example for collaboration all the time. That's one of the best examples of collaboration I can come up with, which it wasn't Nathan saying, "Alicia, I think we should do this. Excuse me." And it wasn't, "You might want to edit that out. You might not." And it wasn't me saying, "Nathan, I think we should do this." You really can't necessarily tell who wrote what.
Which is also a sign of two people who are simpatico and on that same wavelength, right? You talked about collaborating between two people is very difficult. there's that whole concept of the third entity in a conversation. So there's me and there's you, and then there's our relationship, which is that third entity. And in service of that, that third entity sometimes is a bit of a bear.
And but the third entity is where the power is, Jay.
True. Yes.
I think much. Nathan, what do you think?
I'm
thinking of season two for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think there was definitely a relationship there. There was trust. I understood. The interesting thing is we worked together a little bit in our day jobs, of course. I don't think we were assigned together yet. But I'd seen enough. Oh, actually, we were assigned on the same team for a while when you came to Charlotte.
Oh, right. That was just for a smidgey of time,
right,
wasn't it?
That's right. But I saw how she worked. And I'll be honest with you. I prefer to work with people who are comfortable looking sloppy along the way. Now, Alicia sat here and she has lied to you people and told you folks, and I'm all organized and everything looks good. My shit is sloppy all the way through. I mean, it is. It's just, and that's the way it should be. That's what change is. I coach change. I coach chaos. I try to bring things to order. I should be the sloppiest looking thing coming to you and saying, this is it. You know, everything I do should look like a workshop. It shouldn't look like some polished, you know, presentation. So
I'm calling bullshit, because remember the first time we worked together and I sent you pictures of my handwritten sticky notes and you made fun of me because you had your shit all organized in a Google Doc. So don't be I'm calling bullshit right here, right now.
There's an honesty though with the quote unquote sloppiness, right? There's an honesty. You can tell when someone's actually working something out, and you can tell when they're more interested in the repartee and the conversation going back and forth and the ideas bouncing around in the room, then I need to make sure this is fully double spaced and left indented and all that. There's almost an intellectual honesty, I guess, in being a little bit of a mess, because it's like, oh, you can see, oh, I can see myself in that person.
But we're always supposed to be working something out. Given what we do, if I come to the table with a recipe, you should tell me to go sit and spin on it.
Right.
Because that's not the way this works. That means I'm just rinsing and repeat. It's just a rinse and repeat game for me. And I don't think change is ever a rinse and repeat game.
No. There was in the new, we just interviewed him, Joshua Karepsky book. He talks about the idea of working something out as a stand-up comic, and how Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle were living in New Jersey at one point. And you could go to the Comedy Factory in New Brunswick and Chris Rock would get up on stage. And he would bomb for 40 minutes, but he would bomb because he's working things out. He's trying to find the vibe, trying to find where, okay, maybe the punchline didn't land, but the setup was good. And again, I guess if there's a lesson for any of the listeners, is be comfortable without everything. Not everything needs to be perfect all the time. You can show some of the wrinkles and some of the thought process behind it, because that's where some of the art is. You know, Nathan, we were talking about music before we started, and I like a lot of very fast, very extreme stuff. And the big trend now is you record it and you snap it to a grid in Pro Tools and everything is perfectly lined up. And it's not organic at all.
Right.
Right. Like some of the best musicians, you can hear them on record where they come off the beat and they go back on. They start up, they slow down and they speed up. And it's just them trying to, you know, keep pace. That makes it interesting to listen to. But when everything is so clean and mechanical and just sterile, I guess is the best adjective, it kind of loses its effectiveness. It doesn't resonate if it's too clean.
Yeah. And I think, I totally agree with you from a music standpoint. Real quick, right now I'm in a place where I don't listen to anything that's polished. So like Spotify has these great playlists that you can listen to where you can hear finger noise. You can hear musicians go off key. There's these experimental playlists. But to take us back into Agile, I think that whole polished aspect of, you know, I have to present well, I have to know what I'm doing, is one of the main reasons that our transformations or are adopting of new ways to work fails for the people who are trying to implement it, because they come in and they feel like everything should be polished and we need to have a plan and we need to know this and who's in charge of this, who's responsible. And the real case is it needs to look like shit while it's going, while it's taking place. We are always going from here, from somewhere. We're here for a moment and we're pointing to somewhere, and that looks ugly all the way through. Sometimes there's no way to make that look good.
Mm-hmm.
And businesses, they don't like that. They, you know, so well,
it's not a dressed up, trussed up PowerPoint.
Right.
I think that has done the shirts and certs movement, coupled with the over commodification sales of, we can, you know, I'm real shy, but I could transform your company for $49.95. That those two things put together have really really done what we try to do with the service, because it sets the wrong expectation. I'm going to have this guy or gal come in and they're going to be dressed up and they're going to have all these smooth PowerPoints with animations and slides, and we're going to do this framework and it's going to all just clip together. And then you do that first sprint and you're like, well, this is nothing like what they said it was going to be. And that, you know, you set the expectation here, you end up down here, you're fighting an uphill battle for the remainder of the effort. So let's talk about transformation. So you two, when you sat down to do your show, you specifically wanted to talk about the idea of transformation. Why? Why that topic as opposed to the 9,000 other things you could have chosen in this agile plethora?
Well, Alicia's not saying anything, so I think this, I need to step out here first. Okay. It's, you know, that's interesting. I can say now that I've never had that question asked to me. You know, the show, our podcast is called Transformation Simulation. And I don't know if we ever thought of doing anything else. I will say that the thing that really, the main reason I wanted to do the podcast was for simulations, to talk through real situations where teams, organizations, peoples, groups, whatever, were trying to transform and having trouble with it. I think the word transformation got thrown in there because that's what we were doing at the time, and it rhymes with simulation.
Hey, whatever works. Whatever works.
I think, Matt, that was a couple years, that was a few years ago. I've slept a few times since then. But I think also, Jay, we wanted to talk about the messy bits. And the way to talk about the messy bits was to draw upon our experiences and create fictional simulations of those experiences and then have a conversation about it. And transformation is nothing if not messy. I think it's worth noting that season 3, which we thoughtfully paused on purpose, I guess that's what thoughtful means. That was redundant. Because we decided that the way the industry approaches transformations doesn't work. And we didn't have anything else to talk about around that other than it doesn't work. And so we hit pause and said, now what? And we're wrestling through now what, Jay? Mm-hmm. What do we have to say that is valuable? Because just saying, hey, capital A, capital T, agile transformations doesn't work, good luck, folks. But there's not a lot of conversation around that. And so we have paused season 3 to figure out what is valuable to talk about.
Yeah.
And we don't have an answer yet.
And you touched on an interesting point, because you could go either way. You could go into the, hey, I want to bash XYZ, which is basically a cottage industry now. Just sign into LinkedIn and search for hashtag agile.
Oh, 8 out of 10
posts. 8 out of 10 posts is someone complaining about Scrum, someone complaining about Safe, someone complaining about story points. It's like, how long are we going to have the same conversation? Right. So that's the one half. Or the other half is the consultant-y, no offense, any consultants, the glossing over. Oh, well, you just have to do this
and the hand waving, and then you wave your hands.
Yeah, hand waving slides. You know, sassafras, and then it's all done. You know, it's, you know, Spirin Patronus. Here comes Harry Potter with the wand. And I don't even know what spell I just said, but it's not And like you said, they don't follow the script. They're not, they don't really work at that scale, at that size. And I'm, why? If we were sitting in a rocking chair at age 80. Okay, Nathan, I'll start with you. Sitting in a rocking chair at age 80 and someone comes up and says, "Hey, Nathan, you know, you used to do this show on agile transformations and some of the literature now, it talks about how transformations didn't work. Why was that? What is the book not telling us?" What would you say?
The only answer I would give is that we didn't take the time to transform the people or to challenge the people in the changing, really, the way they think and feel about their work. We just came in and gave them a framework, a methodology, a set of meetings they should attend, and expected something to happen.
Even worse, we came in with a project plan for an agile transformation.
I love the whole not being agile about your agile. Probably one of, if not the best coach I've ever worked with, my mentor, told me, you know, this is a lot like gardening. You're kind of like Johnny Appleseed in the sense that you're running around and you're throwing seeds everywhere. Well, this is what could be. This is what could be. This is what could be. And some people it hits and it falls to the ground, and some people it hits and it germinates and it grows. And I think the reason why we encounter such difficulty is we're not realistic with our expectations. And the biggest expectation we're not realistic in is time, because anybody can change. It could take a month, a day, a year, a lifetime. But I mean, when I go into quantum physics, we're all changing right now, right? There is no is, it's everything is becoming. But we're unrealistic in our expectations when we say, oh, it'll only take 18 months, or that's not, you're painting the wrong picture. You're only going to disappoint you.
I went first last time. But you're right. I mean, it, you know, realistically, it takes a while. I mean, and lately I'm in a place where I really think that transformations take as long as it takes the person to accept the change and kind of see their work and their role in a different way. And that could take a year, that could take 3 years. Realistically, sometimes that could take 5 years if you're that patient. So it can take a while. I'm working with a person now who is not that welcoming of change. I've worked with this person for a year. This person is a 1+1 always equals 2. Transformations, 1+1 does not equal 2. Mm-hmm. It can equal 4. It could equal 0.5 or whatever the case is. But this person I've been working with, 1+1 always adds up to 2. And even though we've been working together for a year in a transformation, they've had a number of sprints. They're working with all these different agile people. 1+1 still has to equal 2 for them. So the other part of that is, I think that we haven't accounted for, there's just some personalities that aren't going to, you know, that have to have this kind of structured, more of a just rigid methodology to say, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. And so agile to an extent, I don't think works for those real serious personalities like that.
No, I would agree that, I mean, it's not, organizational change is hard, but there are some people where truthfully are not going to make the turn. Either they don't want to, or they're not mentally able to. Jorgen Hesselberg talked about it in his book that somewhere between 12 and 15% of any enterprise size organization's population will not be ready or willing to make that change, to make that transformation. Yeah. And the truly transcendent part of good leadership is recognizing those people, those areas, and humanely helping them to find somewhere where they'll be happy. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think we automatically say, well, when such a person will make a change, we automatically say, well, it's a reflection of us or it's a reflection on them, which is an even worse mindset to take. And we're not really humane about it. To your point about, you know, not being agile about our agile, not being humane about how we treat people with change, where you know, not everybody is that accepting and can flip on the dime or create the space to be open to something new.
We also don't always incent people to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do the opposite of that.
Yeah, we do the opposite of that. Yeah. And so it's, if I get paid more for my individual achievements and I get bonused more and I get better accolades, I am not incented to change and work harder as a team or work harder as a team member.
Right.
Yep. Very true. Very true. We've had discussions on this show that most of us are convinced if you really want your transformation to work, the first two departments you start with are HR and finance.
Yeah. I've been hearing that too.
Roles and incentives in HR and then how you fund your work in finance. Mm-hmm. And then that you basically paint people into a corner to say, here's how you're going to get your money for your department, for your new work. Here's your new title. And here's how your bonus comes out. I, my mentor one day in a drunken conversation said, you know, I'll bet if we rolled something out that said, look, everybody's involved in the transformation. Those of you that can prove you have adopted an agile mindset, an agile way of working, 20% bonus. Those of you that can't, no bonus whatsoever, you're on a PIP. He's like, it's kind of dark and terrible, but we could incent a change that way. And then we both looked at each other and we've all worked in like banks and like financial institutions. And he looked at me and he said, company name deleted, would probably go for this if I pitched it. And I looked at him, I said, yeah, don't ever say that out loud to anybody else again, because either they'll hear you or some consultant will hear you and try and sell it and it's not going to go well. But to your point, Alicia, incentivization is a big part of it. And if you don't create the space for someone to say, okay, well, I got to work this way now because of the old way, kind of sunk.
And incentives are more than just money, but we just think of money is the quickest incentive that we think of. But if you create a learning environment and you incent people to be a part of that learning environment, what does that look like?
Right.
What are we learning in Jonathan Smart and BVSSH talks about inflict over invite. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can inflict the hell out of an agile transformation. It's not going to stick. There's no incentive there.
Yeah. Yep. And building on that, you have your infliction, your invitation, your inspiration, mm-hmm. where people get it and they just run with it. Now they're coming to you to say, hey, Nathan, we're trying to do this. What do you know works? Or what have you heard works? That's, I think it is possible. I mean, if we were really being nihilistic, we could do another episode on why transformations won't work in a company over a certain size. And we can really go down that rabbit hole, because the longer I do this, the more I kind of think once you reach a certain size, it's just.
Right.
Do you remember back in the day? Do you remember way, way back in the day? I don't know. I don't know if I should use his name. Someone told me way back in the day, one of the original, like the oldies, said, you can't scale this. It's not meant to.
Sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, that's why what came out of the Snowbird, it was teams. It wasn't scale. Scale came in, what, years later? Mm-hmm.
And not by those folks.
Mm-mm. No, most of them have actually come out against it, if not disowned it entirely.
Right.
Yeah.
I just think it's... Oh, I don't know. It's hard to scale energy. It's hard to scale motivation. It's hard to scale inspiration.
It is.
And it's not
because those are all personal things, right, Alicia?
Yeah.
They're all personal. Yeah. It's different. It literally is different for every single person and every right. single.
What is it? The pace of change is the pace of change. My pace of change is different than your pace of change is different than Nathan's pace of change. And I can't hold Nathan accountable for my pace of change or me accountable for his. What do you do with that?
The best analogy I can think of is pace of change is like PowerPoint. Change is like PowerPoint, right? So we've all been to that meeting where somebody gets up and they have a deck. And for some people, they move too fast. And it's, well, wait, go back. I wasn't done with the last slide. Mm-hmm. Some people, they move too slow. What are you doing? Go to the next slide. I've read this already.
Right.
But yet we're stuck with the pace of the person presenting. And then cognitively, we go in different directions and it all just kind of falls apart. I think that same analogy can be done to a transformation where we go at a pace where some may be ready to go faster. Some may need to go slower. And yet when we come in with a project plan, or when someone comes in with a plan to say, this is how we're going to transform, again, you've established a pace that maybe not everybody is operating at. And it's
assumptive.
I'm so glad that Nathan has instruments in the background so I can get away with the musical references, right? It's the equivalent of every instrument in the band playing on a different time, but they all line up on the 4-beat. They all line up on the 8-beat. You know, 16 beats later, they all come back in. That's what change truly is in an organization. And yet we're literally doing the equivalent of, no, the timpanis need to play on the same time signature as the violins. Yeah. Whereas polymeter is multiple signatures all layering over each other. It doesn't necessarily work for everybody. I'm sorry, Alicia, that was really a nerd reference, but.
You lost me a smidge, but I mean, I'm still standing here, but I don't know what the hell you just said.
So let me ask you both this. I'll start with you, Nathan. With all the discussion we've had with your experience with your show, with transformations as a whole, where is this going? Where's this world going? The world of the Agile transformation, the world of the Agile practitioner, where's it going?
I wish I knew. I can probably best answer that for me. I don't know. It doesn't seem the innovation is there for transformations anymore. Now, keep in mind, I've only worked at big companies. Big companies want to buy and install or adopt. That energy really isn't there. The innovation for it is not there. They want structure. It to me, it feels like from where I sit that it is just becoming another framework or methodology they can consider that they can just adopt and roll out and check some boxes and feel like they've done something. So from a big from that perspective, I don't know where Agile is going to go from there. I don't know where we are going to go. Then the other thing is, you know, we have a whole generation of young people that are coming into the workforce that are actually learning this in college. And I don't think they have the same innovative perspective that we do on how Agile is used. They're probably learning it and thinking about it as just another thing they can use to get somewhere. And along the same lines as waterfall or anything else they want to use. Mm-hmm. So I think is actually the next generation is just going to think of, this is Agile, this is waterfall, this is something else. We can just consider all these things and they're just ways to get things done.
Ways to get things done. Good. Well said. Well said. How about you, Alicia? Where are we going?
In the shitter. I think I can't prophecy. Like, that just seems such a heavy question to answer, Jay, but I think we need to discover really where we're at and what's going to serve us. The landscape is less patient than it's ever been. The younger generation is less patient. They don't need this shit. The heavy-handedness that comes with legacy systems and waterfall mentality, it's gone when you look at the generation after us. They just don't bring it to the table. Right. And so I think they're going to say, what do we need to do to get work done to survive? And I don't think it's going to have the same labels. And I don't think it's going to have the same rules. And I think the answer will be, how do we get to where we need to be? It's, you know how scrappy it was back in the day when Agile first, it was scrappy. It was grippy, right? You figured your shit out because there were no coaches to hire. There were no consultants who knew this stuff. There was no framework in place. There was XP, there was Scrum. There was a little bit of, lean product delivery was around. The Pop and Dicks, I always pronounce their name wrong. I feel badly about that. They're quite lovely, but I always pronounce their name wrong. So there was a scrappiness to what was going on before. And I think we're going to see a scrappiness again. Unfortunately, in the middle of that scrappiness, there's all this bullshit infighting. So you have to sort of wade through the bullshit infighting to get to the other end of, well, what does it look like? And the answer is probably going to be back to what Ken Schwaber taught me way, way, way back in the day, which was, well, what makes sense? Put on your thinking cap. What makes sense? What creates the least friction? And agile, I learned, was the art of the possible. That notion is so far gone, yeah. But I think that's going to resurface. I just think it's not going to be attributed to agile. Yeah. I think this is just what we have to do to survive. So I think we're going to see a survivalist movement, and I think we're going to get rid of the labels of waterfall and agile and lean and this and that. And it's going to be, what do we need to do to get stuff done? And we're going to strip the labels off again.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we're going to see a shedding of some of the extraneous.
Yes. BS. A shedding.
Back to what we really need. So we're running out of time. So last question, this is going to be a fun one. So we have a lot of people who listen to our show who are different levels of practitioners. We have people who are new to Scrum, new to Agile, product owners, Scrum Masters, product managers. We have some RTEs. We have a whole bunch of coaches, people from all different levels. So I'm going to start with you, Nathan. If you had to offer one piece of advice to someone who's getting into our world, either as a Scrum Master or as a product owner, or learning the Agile, the Agile Zen, the Agile Yoda, what would the piece of advice, based upon your experience, what piece of advice would you pass on?
Oh, that's a tough one. Was that in the notes for the?
No. Oh, no, see, but this is my stereotypical gotcha question I've been getting people with lately, and I don't want to add anything because I don't want people to overthink it.
There you go. That's good call, because I would have overthought this. I'm going to say the one piece of advice I would offer is to this is tough. I would say transform. If we could use that word, transform yourself as much as possible. See yourself in this perspective where you're actually helping teams, people, organizations provide value. And when you see yourself doing that, forget about all the frameworks. Just forget about them. Forget about Scrum. Forget about Kanban. Forget about whatever. And see yourself sitting there helping people get to where they need to go. But transform yourself and see yourself in that way.
Okay. Alicia, same question. What piece of advice would you pass on?
Come on, I didn't get to go first. Nathan gave the good answer.
I can't win here.
No, there's no winning with us, Jay. That's why other people dropped out, actually, Jay. That's exactly why. Because
it's
awful.
The Alicia and Nathan show.
We're awful together. What popped into my head when I heard you ask that question was, be practical. What can you do? What can you do given the circumstance? And also, be dismissive of, I mean, I grew up in software. Be dismissive of the legacy system thinking. Don't hang on to it. Don't accept it. Don't try and work around it. You know, the Kool-Aid man who used to bust through the brick wall? Mm-hmm. I feel like just go be the Kool-Aid man. But Nathan's also right. You have to transform yourself first. You have to have a level of self-awareness in order to be able to pave the way and create an environment where others can follow.
Perfect. So Alicia and Nathan, this has been a pleasure. I want to thank you for your time. On behalf of Alicia, Nathan, and myself, I want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in once again. And just as a typical readout reminder, if you like what you heard, please give us a review, a rating on PodHub, iTunes, your podcast listening platform of choice. If you want to continue this conversation, we have a Discord server. It is quite vibrant. Newest change we've had is we have an entire channel dedicated to clean language. So if that's something you're into, you might want to hop in on the dialogue. I also want to give a shout out to the Machine Man Records and the artist Krebs for providing our outro music royalty free. So once again, for Nathan, Alicia, and myself, I want to thank you for tuning in. And until next week, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast signing out.